An ambitious Australian study into how closely the care we receive adheres to the evidence has been launched, and the reason for covering it here on the Health Report is that they're going to be phoning tens of thousands of people in a recruitment exercise, and you might be one of them. So it could be handy to be aware of what it's about. One of the researchers running the so-called CareTrack study is Bill Runciman, Professor of Patient Safety and Healthcare Human Factors at the University of South Australia.
What we're seeking to do is establish the percentage of healthcare encounters at which Australians get what we're calling appropriate care. And we're doing a retrospective medical record review in the years 2009 and 2010, and we're trying to get 1,000 Australians that are representative of the population.
It sounds completely daunting, given that in many areas we don't know what the best evidence is.
Yes, that's why we've called it appropriate. It's either best practice, which of course includes affordability and so on, which is evidence-based, but we include in evidence level 4 evidence, which is where there isn't any scientific evidence, where there's consensus.
And so when you say level 4, there are various levels of evidence defined by international authorities and the National Health Medical Research Council, level 1 being where you've got several randomised trials which people have brought together, and the grouping of this research suggests this is the way to go, down to opinion, if you like.
Yes.
Has anybody else in the world done a study like this?
Yes, the one we are more or less modelling it on was done by the RAND organisation in the United States, and they determined that in America, adults got recommended care, as they call it, about 55% of the time, and children about 46% of the time.
A significant gap.
And some of the gap is over-servicing, and some of the gap is under-servicing or mis-servicing, and a lot of it it's not.
I was going to say, is this people dying in the streets?
No, but nevertheless, collectively, they mean there's a lot of inappropriate care. And in a healthcare system with a finite budget, where people are being denied important new cancer drugs and so on, clearly we want to stop spending money on stuff that's not appropriate and not cost-effective. In the United States, and again, there's only indirect evidence of this here, the fifth of the population, the quintile with the most expensive care, is 50% more expensive per capita than the base quintile, and they have no worse outcomes and no worse perception of the care they get.
I mean, some of it will be things like unnecessary x-rays of the back when you've got a bad back, or unnecessary scans which cost the country a lot of money, or unnecessary prescription of acid-lowering drugs. How much of it, though, is, you know, you've got maybe an irregular heartbeat of the top of your heart, atrial fibrillation, and you're not getting proper anticoagulation, which means you could get a stroke?
Well, that's a good example, because internationally, the rate at which people are anticoagulated with atrial fibrillation is less than 30%, which is astonishing considering the problem that you have is a stroke.
And what sort of conditions particularly are you looking at?
These are common conditions that cause quite a big burden of disease, things like osteoarthritis, low back pain, diabetes, asthma, depression, and things like that.
You've done a pilot study in this.
Yes,
and
yes,
you go out and you recruit members of the public, and you presumably ask their permission to go and see their GP and look at their records.
Yeah, we use computer-assisted telephone interviews to just randomly dial people from the white pages. And we dialed 18,000, for example, in South Australia to try and get 500 in the final sample. And then the first interview, we explain what it's about, and we ask them if they're prepared to give us consent to look at their medical records. And then if they do, we then send them a package with consent forms. And then if they fill that in and return it, then they have a second interview at which we ask them what conditions they have. And then if they have one of the 22 conditions in question, we ask them who their care providers are. And then we would then contact the hospital or general practice in order to...
Gosh, you're asking quite a lot of everybody down the track here. I mean, first of all, in your pilot, did you manage to get people who didn't speak English, for example, terribly well? Or
yes,
had six kids and therefore no time in their lives to actually deal with a bundle of papers?
Absolutely. It is, as you say, a bit daunting and ambitious. But people have been remarkably good about it.
Now, doctors own the records. It's not the patients who own medical records, despite what people might think. Are doctors going to let you in? I believe in the pilot study you got a lot of refusals from the doctors.
Yes, I think the general practitioners in particular get a lot of surveys, and it's difficult to try and get people's attention. There are no resource requirements. We send trained surveyors into the practices who then access the records. And the other important thing is that it's protected under what's called Section 5C of the Commonwealth Healthcare Act, which means the information is completely confidential, and anyone who leaks any information can go to jail, and any information is inadmissible in a court of law.
And then you interview the doctor. Now, notice in the South Australian healthcare provider information sheet, it says
to the doctor, it's possible that questions about the management of your patient's condition could upset you. What are you going to put the thumb screws on? What's the story here?
That is actually required by the College of General Practitioners.
For the fragile egos out there.
It was a recommendation by their ethics committee, and they can withdraw at any stage.
Now, despite me giving you a hard time, Bill, this is an important study to find out what is happening to people. And there aren't going to be any recriminations on any individual doctor. You simply want to find out, presumably in some situations, it'll be quite clear why they did what they did, and it's just you want to know if there's an alternate explanation.
That's exactly right, and we want to identify areas where there could be improvements in practice, particularly with the electronic decision support tools that are coming along, because you can
And what you're talking about here is the doctor sits with an electronic record in front of them on the computer screen, and if they type in certain information, they might get a pop-up which says, did you know if you did this with this patient, you'd get a better outcome, that sort of thing.
Exactly that. And, for example, I noted that in one of your reports, I think 8 years ago, you commented
Gosh, you've been listening a long time, Bill. It's quite gratifying to hear.
On asthma plans, and you said there, you know, it's a good thing to have an asthma plan in case your asthma gets worse, and that wasn't being very well done, but was just about to improve. And in our pilot study, that was one thing was very poorly done. People didn't have asthma plans documented, and clearly that's very important to avoid hospital admissions and also to avoid the odd catastrophic event.
So the message is, if you get phoned up asking you to participate, you should participate. And if you're a doctor, try and make time for people to come in and have a look at the records.
We'd be very pleased if that is the case, particularly practices.
And if somebody's listening and wants more information about this study, they're interested to find out more, where can they go?
There is a website. It's called CareTrack, CareTrack Australia.
And we'll have that URL on the Health Report's website. Professor Bill Runciman, thanks for joining us on the Health Report.
Thank you very much.
Bill Runciman, Professor of Patient Safety and Healthcare Human Factors at the University of South Australia.